If there is a more spectacular guitar player than Tommy Emmanuel, I do not know of one. He also crosses that line in that he's a guitar player's fan guitar player. I'm using the word guitar a lot because there's a lot of guitar in what Tommy does. Tommy has just released a new album. It came out number one on the Bluegrass Billboard charts, Accomplice One. And he's got a lot of great bluegrass players on there. We're going to talk to Tommy as he describes how he put this album together, how he used different players. Some of them very much bluegrass tuned, but some of them not in bluegrass settings. It's just a phenomenal collection of artists and music, and you're going to enjoy it. You're going to hear from Tommy Emmanuel. You have a little bit of depth about the music that he's doing on Accomplice One, and maybe there's a second or a third coming up. Thanks so much for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass. I'm really happy to welcome to Unreal Bluegrass Tommy Emmanuel. How are you, Tommy?
Well, I'm doing well, considering we're busy as a one-armed fiddler.
the reason, Tommy, I've been a fan forever, and one of the reasons that I wanted to speak to you was I had the opportunity to have this excuse, Accomplice One, a brand new new recording you released, and you use. We'll talk about this. You use a lot of people very familiar to a bluegrass audience. You don't always use them on bluegrass tunes. You have Duke Ellington tunes on here. You have Django Reinhardt tunes on here. But you do use a lot of names we would know, and you use names from other areas. But the album is, I mean, it kicks it off right away with Doc Watson, Deep River Blues. I mean, how can you start off better than that?
Jason Isbell sings the hell out of that. It's beautiful. He's the right guy for that song, you know. It was just so many things about making this album were so right, you know. The Song and Dance Man song, I've known that song since I played on the original back in the 70s. And I always loved the song, and I always felt that Ricky Skaggs should sing it. And so when I got Ricky to come in to the studio, we recorded an instrumental track first, and he played guitar on it as well. And then I sang the song to him, and, of course, he loved it and owned the song in 10 minutes, you know. And Ricky's such a good singer, so he was the right choice for that song, you know. And we just did it with guitar and mandolin and him singing, and then we put some bass and some harmony vocals and stuff on a little bit later. But everything about this album, nobody... you know, emailed their part in. Everybody that I work with on this album, we all played together in the studio. It's live in the studio.
Well, and that's, Tommy, it has a very live feel. I mean, there's a lot of interaction. You can hear it between the musicians, the different guests that you have. But I'm glad you mentioned that, because it has a very, it's not I don't want to say stripped down, but it's kind of basic. It's you and the players and the instruments.
That's right.
And there's a definite atmosphere of what's going on inside the studio as a live performance.
Exactly. Well, that's what I wanted to achieve. I mean, when I did tracks like Borderline with Amanda Shires, her and I did that with her singing and me playing rhythm guitar. Then, in order to get the right sound, we put the fiddle on afterwards, and then she left, and I put bass and drums on it, and a little bit of electric guitar, and put all my backing vocals on. So I became the band, but the core of it is just her and I, you know, and that's why everything works so well. It's all real, you know.
Tommy, I think, and let me get into it this way. I think everybody recognizes that you appreciate music, and you're going to play any kind of music that's interesting to you, and you're going to play it your way. And I wonder about your exposure to some of the greatest. I love jazz. I listen to jazz. I have a jazz program. As a matter of fact, I played Django Reinhardt last night because I knew I was thinking about Djangology on this album.
What a song.
Well, it is. And so how do you... I think some bluegrass musicians are some of the greatest in the world, and they do such great stuff. How do you get attracted to them, and how do you decide which ones you want to pick out for something like this?
Well, I mean, people like Brian Sutton.
Oh, my.
He can play all the traditional fiddle tunes. He can play all the famous fiddle tunes, you know, and he can play all Doc stuff and all that, but... you can go off and play anything you want with Brian. He's totally an open vessel, you know, and that's the way you should be. You know, as long as it's got soul and it's got good melody, good chords, you know, I'll tell you what, a lot of those Bill Monroe tunes, people think that's just, you know, simple bluegrass music. There's a lot going on in Bill Monroe's songs, and they're not easy to remember. A tune like Jerusalem Ridge has four complete sections, and you've got to remember each section, and they're not the same, you know, and it's mind-boggling when you think about it. But that's how Bill Monroe was wired. That's how he thought and played, and it's very clever. And it's kind of jazz in its own way.
It's blues. And people forget there was blues. He had this very driving blues feel to what he was doing because of who taught him the music. He brought in so many different forms of music to become what...
I can hear New Orleans in his music.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
Definitely.
That's accurate.
And that's another reason why, you know, David Grisman and Brian Sutton and I did the Watson Blues.
Yeah, I was going to get right to that. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I had not heard that song before Brian showed it to me. And then I went onto YouTube and watched Bill Monroe and Doc Watson play it, you know. And, of course, our version's a little slower, a little bit kind of down and dirty. And then that's David Grisman's influence, you know. Mm-hmm. He said, let's bring it back. Let's make it a little groovier, you know.
Yeah.
And so... When David and I toured last year, you know, I said, you know, why don't we kind of split the difference? Let's go a little faster, but not as fast as Doc and Bill. So that was okay. You know, I was just trying to get it a little more exciting.
That's why I wanted to get to that, because but Brian Sutton and David Grisman, two of the finest all-around musicians, on par with things. Look at music, very, very similar. I mean, I would imagine you're very comfortable with them because, as you mentioned of Brian, and David's the same way, he can play whatever you want to play.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You use them on Watson Blues.
Working with guys like that, and Jerry Douglas, you know, Jerry came in to play on another track, and we got that done pretty quickly, and then we still had some time left, and I said, have you ever played Purple Haze? And he said, no. And I said, well, good, let's have a go at it, you know. So we went in back into our little huddles and in front of the microphones and put our headphones on, and I said to him, I play it like this, and I played a little bit of it, and he said, don't tell me too much, just let me find it, you know.
Right.
So we rolled tape and we played it one time. And we just, like, chased each other around the playground, you know? That was Purple Haze.
Have you seen or have you heard, and you may have, Jerry last year did an album called What If, where he just decides, what if I just did a jazz album? And he's got two horns. He's got, like, two guys could be the Brecker Brothers on one thing. He's got Jean-Luc Ponty on the fiddle. It's just jazz, and that's something he always wanted to do, so.
Oh, he's phenomenal. And you know, his new band with Mike on the guitar, I wish I could remember his second name, but he's one hell of a young player. And that Cave Bop.
Yeah.
That's on What If,
it's phenomenal. And Jerry just likes doing stuff like that. You have him on Purple Haze. You have Brian Sutton and David Grisman on two tunes, Watson Blues, which we touched on. But then also you have an Ellington, CJM Blues.
Yeah, CJM Blues. We just wanted to jam out on that song because it was going so well. We actually recorded six songs that morning, and it was just the right combination of people. And you know, technically Brian Sutton's one of the few people who feels the time the same way I do, and it's like him and I just click as players, and I think we tend to bring the best out in each other.
Well, I think you did on this one. Let me ask you this. Accomplice One. I have a feeling there's going to be an Accomplice Two.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Steve. That's why I called it Accomplice One.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've got other tracks, and I've got some other people, like Alison Krauss is going to be on the next one. You know, I'm hoping to get some folks who wouldn't normally play or sing in this genre of Americana, bluegrass, and swing music. So, you know, I've got some ideas going for the next album.
We'll just keep that under our hat for a minute.
We will.
and we talked a little bit before we started on the air, Tommy, the label. I want to make sure that I get that correct, and I want to let people know. Where, and we're not finished talking about the songs yet, but don't let me forget to mention the label. You explain the label to me.
Well, I own the label. It's CGP Sounds. And we are released and distributed by our friends at 30 Tigers. And they're doing a great job for us.
Okay. And the album is, it just came out, Accomplice One just came out in January this year, I think?
January, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's it debuted at number 8 on the
Bluegrass Billboard.
Americana chart.
Well, and on the Bluegrass Billboard, it's up around 2.
Yeah, it debuted at number 1.
Yeah, yeah.
On the Bluegrass chart.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're in number 1 on iTunes Jazz chart as well.
See, yeah, because you have Ellington, you have... Go ahead.
Can't ask for better than that.
No. And you did this, and I love Frank Vignola. And we were talking about Django Reinhardt. You do Djangology, and you bring in Frank Vignola, and I'm thinking, you know, that's how I know that you know what you're looking for. Not that I would ever doubt it, but not every jazz fan guitar automatically connects with Frank Vignola. You got to get a little bit deep into it, but he's just so versatile and can do everything. He's got the greatest taste.
I met Frank when he was working with Les Paul when I first came to play with Les. Frank was the main soloist with Les, and I was just so thrilled to meet him and to hear him play. And you know, him and I are like brothers from another mother. And Frank and Vinnie Raniolo is playing on that track as well, and that track was recorded in Havana, Cuba. We were down there teaching the first ever guitar camp to be held in Cuba. And in the studio were 85 students sitting in the orchestra room with us. And the lesson for the day was that we would arrange Djangology in front of the class. So I worked out my part. Frank worked out the melody. Vinny worked out all these harmonies. And then we put it together and showed them how it works. And then we mic'd up our guitars and stood there in front of the students and said, okay, everybody be quiet. We're gonna record this. And that's the recording.
It's, you know, and it's funny, Django Reinhardt, and maybe some, I think the audience of Unreal Bluegrass are hip, and I'm talking to Tommy Emmanuel if you're just tuning in. I think they're hip enough to get who Django is, but I don't know, and I've had this discussion before. Best guitar player ever. I think he might be one of the best, if you're going to talk about best musicians ever. Do you think, Tommy? I mean, he did things that nobody could do, and you're still trying to figure it out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When people say to me, who's the greatest guitar player of all time, it's easy. It's Django. Yeah. No one even comes close. But that's just my opinion.
No, I agree with you.
It means nothing.
No, it does. It does because, first of all, the recordings are all old. There's very little footage of him. You might catch him in a movie somewhere where you can watch him do with his left hand, which is just phenomenal, and it's so easy, and he's just so calm and relaxed.
He's incredible. But his ideas and his writing,
exactly,
and just everything about what he did, it was so unique, and it still is. You know, I very rarely sit around listening to other guitar players. You know, I'm more interested in listening to singers and songwriters, but If I want to get my dress blown up, then I listen to Django. You know,
I like
he's
that.
He's the conduit. He's the man.
I like that. I like that. He was, and we don't even have to talk about issues with his left hand because you didn't know there were any. If you hadn't seen, read the story, you thought he had 10 fingers on his left hand because it didn't matter. It didn't matter. It didn't matter.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, when I got to know Chet Atkins a long time ago, it was the same thing. He was always talking about Django and how great Django was, you know.
Isn't that something? Isn't that something? I mean, it's just he was this gypsy guitar player from Europe, and the world never. And there are festivals. Well, you probably know this, Tommy. There are festivals of people who do nothing. There was one big ones in New York, and there's a lot of them in Europe, where people who are very, very good at doing Django stuff go just to play Django's music, and
exactly,
you know,
because we want to keep it alive, you know, and it's such exciting music.
The mentioned a little bit maybe off the air about Jorma Kaukonen. This I thought on Saturday Night Shuffle.
Yeah.
You talk about a country blues shuffle. If you got Jorma, then you're in your groove.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, you know what was? I tell you, that was a great day. Jorma, bless his cotton socks. He was so nice, and I've always loved him like a brother. You know, and he drove all the way from Pomeroy, Ohio.
Yeah, he's got that fur piece ranch, which is way out there.
Yeah, he drove all the way to Nashville to do that recording day with me, and he was so sweet. And him and I recorded a couple of songs. We also did like an electric blues as well, and I played electric guitar with him, you know, so I have that in the can as well.
Oh, good, good.
But when I suggested Saturday Night Shuffle, this was a hilarious moment in our time together. I said to him, okay, the song goes like this, and I said, I want you to solo in this part where it goes from C to B, and I set it up, and then you take a solo. He said, in B? And I said, yeah. He said, I never played in B. We just rolled around laughing. I've never played in B. I said, well, this is your first time. And he's like, oh, God, what am I going to play?
He did
great. And he's such a sweet guy to work with and so authentic, you know.
He's very calm and very, very confident, I think, about what he does. Well, of course, he's been through every. People can look up Jorma if they want to. I don't need to explain it to him, you know. But he's been through it all and still has this wonderful approach to music. Amanda Shire, don't let me forget Charlie Cushman on Wheelin' and Dealin'. How did you get Charlie? And Charlie's banjo player of the year a couple of years ago, and probably the best setup man. You know what that means for an instrument for a banjo player.
Exactly.
How did you get Charlie?
Well, my manager Brian Penix is also managing Jerry, and that includes
the Earls of Leicester. Oh, very good.
And he said, do you want banjo on anything? And I said, yeah, on Wheelin' and Dealin', you know, which was one of my instrumentals that J.D. Simo played on. And he said, all right, I'll give Charlie a call. And he called Charlie, and Charlie came down to the studio, and we hung out a while, and he played with some great stuff on that track and lifted the track up, you know.
he's also a great guitar player. He's as busy playing guitar and studio work as anybody else wants to be. Yeah, you mentioned J.D. Simo. I don't know this name. Can you tell me a little bit about him?
J.D. Simo. He's a young man who originally from Arizona, and I heard him playing and singing at a club in Nashville, and I just thought he was so good. He had a great voice, a great authentic blues rock kind of approach, and so I got him in. I got him in to play on and sing Dock of the Bay, and he played slide on his acoustic on that track, and then I gave him a listen to the kind of up tempo chicken picking song of mine called Wheelin' and Dealin', and he went out to the car, got his Fender Telecaster and his little Fender amp, came in, and he just ripped it up. You know, he just surprised all of us, and it was the right choice. You know, a track like that, I could have had, you know, some of the great players like Brent Mason or John Jorgensen. Mm-hmm. I could have had any of those guys, but JD was different, and that's what I wanted. I wanted an authentic, different player, you know, and that's what I got in JD. And of course, he knew Dock of the Bay really well, and he had the right voice for it.
See what happens, Tommy, when you reach out to all these different... Now people know about J.D. And maybe we didn't before. Maybe some of us did. But so you're introducing all these, not only these new elements of music, but new people or people maybe they weren't familiar with.
Exactly. Well, I mean, a guy like Jason Isbell is definitely on the rise.
No question.
He's winning every award. He's writing incredible songs. Amanda's about to release her album.
Well,
and that's going to be really, really great. So I think... You know, and then, of course, you've got Rodney Crowell in the mix of, you know, the song that he brought to the project was so, so wonderful. And, you know, it's just great to have someone who's such an icon in the world of country music and songwriting as Rodney Crowell is. You know, for me, it was a great honor that he would agree to do that.
And you're talking about the song "Looking Forward to the Past." You're currently touring with Rodney, or doing some dates with
Rodney's
him.
Yeah, Rodney's here.
Mm-hmm.
We've got two more shows to go.
Okay.
Cincinnati and Atlanta, and then Saturday night, I'm at the Ryman. But Jake Shimabukuro is doing that date, and Jake is on this album.
He's on Rachel's Lullaby.
Rachel's Lullaby. And at the start of the track, it's Rachel.
It's Rachel.
She's 2 years old.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, she was messing around playing the ukulele, and she started singing, and she just made all that stuff up. We just happened to be videoing her. So I kept the soundtrack and edited it down so it could fit on the start of Rachel's Lullaby, which I wrote for her.
Yeah, that's what makes so much of this album really intriguing. Not just, of course, the musical elements, but it does have that live feel, and her voice in the beginning of Rachel's Lullaby, I was going to ask you about. Clearly makes it sound like you're just sitting around and your daughter's there.
Yeah, well, I bought her a ukulele, and she just loves it. So, you know, she had this routine where she'd get out of the bath, and then run around naked for a while and you know, loved running around the house with no clothes on. And then she grabbed the ukulele and started playing it as if she was on stage. And she started making up these songs and everything. And that particular time, she was going, you know, body, body, body. She was making all this stuff up. And then suddenly, she put both arms up in the air and stood up and said, "On a Sunday, when it's quiet," and we both looked at you, my wife and I looked at each other and said, "Where the hell did that come from?" You know, it's unbelievable. She just did it, and we just happened to be filming her, so it was definitely a wonderful moment.
And Jake, I think most people know Jake Shimabukuro. If nothing else, from that one YouTube video in Central Park where he kind of reignited the whole world for ukuleles. But he can do so many things, and he's just limitless. Yeah, he's shown everyone that little four string instrument can do whatever you want it
to. It's amazing, isn't it? Mm. Yeah. And I brought Jake to Australia back in 2006.
Did you?
When he was just really getting going, and they loved it. He went over a storm there.
You also have, and this to me is a real good fit for you, Mark Knopfler.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me.
Well, I've been a Mark Knopfler fan right from the beginning, right from his first album, you know. And when I wrote to him about playing on a track with me, he said he would love to, but it needs to be one of his songs because he doesn't play on other people's songs.
Oh.
And I said, "That's fine, because I love everything you've ever written. So let me hear what you got, you know."
And it's the song is just, you don't want to get one of those.
That's right.
Yeah.
If you want to get you one that goes, you don't want to get you one of those.
You know, and not for Sultans of Swing was where I first heard him and then all of a sudden he's recording with Chet Atkins.
Yeah,
and so you think there's something more to this guy than these what were then sort of rock, or at least in the rock and roll genre.
Exactly.
You know, there's something else more going on, and sure enough, there was.
He grew up listening to the same music I did. You know, Don Gibson, Hank Williams, Jimmy Rogers, Jim Reeves, you know, all those singers. When him and I get together, it's like, you know, we talk about the records that meant so much to us when we were young and how they sounded and what parts of that record that we really loved. And I think, I mean, both of us really adored Chet and admired him as a producer, as a player, as an arranger. And, you know, I always knew that Mark and I would eventually get a chance to work together. I just didn't know when it was going to happen.
It just worked out
perfectly because I was in England. I have two daughters in England, and I was there for like a week, and I called his manager, and he said, yeah, Mark knows you want to come in. He's got three films going at the moment. He's doing soundtracks for three films. But he's got a two-hour window for you, you know, on Wednesday morning. Can you be there at 10 o'clock and blah, blah, blah. So I went in. He had the song, had the lyric sheet. He got his acoustic out and sang the song to me. And we worked out where I was going to sing and where who'd take a solo where and all that. And then we just recorded it one time, and that was it.
Wow. Well, it's a perfect fit, I think. And I didn't know that you were that connected to him. But it's a perfect fit. Mm. It's a perfect fit. You and Mark, makes a perfect fit.
I think so.
Listen, tell me about Clive Carroll. And I want to get a couple more things, and I'll let you go. I know you're busy. But Clive Carroll is another
Clive
name
Carroll.
I don't know.
Okay, yeah. Well, again, Clive's one of the genius guitar players from England who plays Celtic music, and he plays it with a great style, a great flair. I've known Clive since he was a very young man, and I've been a fan of his work. His writing is extraordinary. He does films as well, so you know, he writes a lot of his own stuff. But that medley of tunes, I brought some of the tunes to that list of songs, and Clive brought the rest. He plays all the kind of jigs, and I play the other parts. But that was a wonderful morning's work. You know, we rented a studio in London that was known for good acoustics and everything. So we went in there and we just set up kind of facing each other and mic'd our guitars up and just played it as if we were in front of an audience.
Mm.
And it really came up nicely, you know. And then I brought the recordings back to Nashville, and then I added all the kind of Irish percussion and stuff on top of it. I did all that myself later.
Now I understand when you describe him. Now I understand why real is two E's and not E-A-L.
That's right. Yeah, jigs and reel.
That's right. Okay, now I was going to ask you about that. So now that makes perfect sense. I know Susie Bogus, but I want to ask you about Jack Pearson?
Jack Pearson.
Pearson, sorry, I misspoke.
Yeah. Well, Jack Pearson was in the Allman Brothers for a long while.
Well, I looked that up and listened to what he was doing. And the tune we're talking about is Tittle Tattle. So go ahead.
Yeah, Tittle Tattle. Let me tell you about that.
Yes.
I asked Jack to come in and record something with me. He shows up at the studio with his old kind of 1920s parlor guitar, and we mic him up. And I reach for my 1934 Gibson Kalamazoo, which is a little, almost like a lady's guitar, you know, mm-hmm. real, but this is a real old one. It's light and it's got a great tone. And we set up, and I just said to Jack, why don't we have a go at a blues in B flat, you know, just to do something completely different. Because we'd recorded Charlie Christian's 7 Come 11.
Oh, man.
And then, yeah, so that'll be for the next album.
Good, good.
But I said to Jack, let's just have a go at a blues in B flat and see what happens. And my engineer, Brad Bench, pressed record, and Jack just started playing chords. And that's how the song starts. And then I came in with the melody, which is totally improvised. That whole song is totally improvised.
You know, I looked him up a little bit. I wanted you to explain it. But and maybe I'm forcing this on one of the phrases at about four minutes and 30 seconds in. It just could be that I'm wanting so much to hear a reference. I think I hear a small quote from Whipping Post. And it just may be that I've made it up in my head. But from the Allman Brothers.
You probably did.
I do. I think I think that's. I know what that is. It's Good Lord, I Feel Like I'm Dying. It's a little twist on that. It's about four minutes and 30 seconds into it. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, I went back and listened to it a couple of times. And I think that's what I heard. which is okay.
Well, you were right on it, boy. You're on the ball.
And the last tune is the Duke's Message, which is a tune you wrote, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my
beautiful
tune,
song.
And I got my friend Anthony Snape to write that lyric. And I said to him, imagine you're a young boy, and this is a long time ago, and you go to the cinema and you idolize John Wayne and you listen to what he says in his films, and it really affects
okay.
you.
It, yeah.
it holds you up. It gives you something to believe in. And so he went away and researched John Wayne. And when we went to look at the picture of his gravesite and on his gravestone, that's where we got the bridge of the song from.
Yeah.
And it's each night tomorrow comes and hopes we've learned from yesterday. And it's such a good message, you know.
And it is. It's a beautiful song. You've got Susie singing that, which, you know, is...
She could sing the phone book.
That's right.
You know, but the thing I love about Susie is she's so believable. When she sings a song, you really believe her, you know?
Mm. It's beautiful. It's a great way to end the album. I love the way the songs are lined up, and I think that's a great way to get out of it. And I can't wait for whatever comes. Accomplice 2, Accomplice 3, we don't know how many, but something else is going to happen.
Here we go.
Yeah, Tommy, and I think anybody can find you easy enough. Just Google your name. They're going to find out what you're up to, where you're appearing and who you're appearing with. I bet you they can do that.
Yeah, on my website, TommyEmmanuel.com, if you go on there and push on tours, you can spool through and see every show that I've got booked for this year right up to Christmas.
Okay, good. Well, you're a busy man.
I am. I'm trying to get good at this.
Let me ask you this. I will bet you, except if you're traveling and confined in a plane or a car, I will bet you that Tommy Emmanuel is never more than a good arm stretch away from a guitar.
Yeah, I'm literally 2 feet from two guitars.
Well, I just had a feeling that's part of your conversation. And as you're thinking and talking, you're picking up a guitar. I don't know why. Just something I wanted to ask you. So you confirm my suspicion.
If you ask Baylor Fleck the same question, he'd say, "Yep, my banjo's right here."
Always. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right.
Always. And it's, you know, that's how we are. That's a part of us. You know,
yeah.
When I put the guitar on, I don't feel like I'm wearing something. I feel like, I'm complete.
You're complete, yeah. It's Tommy Emmanuel, thanks so much. Wonderful record, Accomplice 1. Everything you do is always worth listening and seeing, and seeing Tommy live to the audience is just one of those things that you will never, ever, ever forget, I don't think. And you have such a good time. You're playing stuff that is so difficult, Tom. But you have such a good time doing it that you make other people think they can do these things, and they can't.
Fool them again.
Yes, you did. All right, listen, I know you're busy. Gosh, thanks so much for your time. This was short notice to you, and
thank you.
And I appreciate
you
being available, man.
Thank
and,
you, Steve.
Good luck on the new album and everything else that you're doing. So I will. Thanks.
All right, brother.
I will let you go.
Big love to all your listeners out there.
We will do that. Thank you, sir.